you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am, of course, the most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith. Thank you for joining me. I'm solo this podcast. Robbie the Fire Bernstein, out with some work-related aids, and I have no guest for today's show. But there was a Democratic debate last night, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Although I really don't even have that much to say about the debate. There were a few points that were worth noting, and we'll get into that. But you know, these things more and more are just there's just a lot of them, and really nothing changes from debate to debate, or just about nothing. There were only six candidates in the debate this time, and you know, like when there were 10. Everybody was like, well, once it starts narrowing down, these things get a little bit better. And then it narrowed down, you know, by 40%. And yeah, it's pretty much the same. Pretty much exactly the same. Not. Turns out those people didn't really have much they could do, even with more time. Before we get into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the last episode of Part of the Problem. And specifically about immigration and the libertarian take on immigration. And I know I've discussed this in the past, but, you know, as I've been thinking about the topic more and more, particularly over the last, you know, few days, I think I've figured it out more in my head, and I'm a little bit clearer, I think, on where I stand on the issue and where a lot of the misconceptions about the issue come up. Now, I just want to start by saying about the last episode, I appreciate John Hudak for coming on the show. I've seen some people taking shots at him in the comments and stuff like that. Leave him alone, first of all. He's fine. He had the balls to come on the show and you know, make his arguments. He made some very fair points. He was a guy who was running a Facebook page that was criticizing me. I said, why don't you come on the show and actually discuss the ideas? And he jumped at the chance to do that, and he earned my respect from that. So, you know, I don't know what to say. I think a lot of people are very, you know, it's part of the kind of internet culture that we're in, but people on all sides of issues can be very harsh, and I don't think that's exactly fair. You know, first of all, he's a young guy, and if you think he's getting some things wrong, which I do think he was getting some things wrong, but it's kind of like, I don't know, who amongst us hasn't gotten some things wrong or doesn't continue to get some things wrong? And particularly for me, I go, I more or less came from his view. I used to kind of have a similar take And I, so, you know, who am I to bash someone for still believing something I used to believe? I see that a lot, by the way, particularly on the more right-wing ex-libertarian types who really just bash libertarians. And they're like, look, I used to be a libertarian 3 years ago, but you're fucking retarded or something. And it's like, okay, well, maybe they're just a little bit behind you. Or maybe you were wrong, and you should still be one. That's possible, too. So it's always good to exercise a little bit of humility in these things. Granted, I don't always take that advice myself, but, you know, I'm right about everything. So, the issue with John, that John had with me, I thought was fairly silly, okay? His problem with me was essentially that I called Stefan Molyneux great. You know, I mean, I don't know. The guy referred to himself as a Rothbardian, and I'm not sure by his own logic he could call Murray Rothbard great. I mean, because he's like, well, I like Murray Rothbard before the 1990s, but in the 1990s, Rothbard said a lot of shit that he probably doesn't like. So can I call him great? If you're going to call yourself Rothbardian, and I can't even call Murray Rothbard great, you might have set up a little bit of a ridiculous standard on when someone should be criticized. That being said, I appreciate him coming on the show. I think he's a good guy, and I get where he's coming from. You know, the immigration issue is a really tough one for a lot of libertarians, and I understand why. Most libertarian positions are much easier to quickly describe. Many of them you can fit onto a bumper sticker, you know? On immigration, it's a little bit tougher. And as I've said in the past, immigration is one of these issues where it's funny because it's one of the issues I've struggled with and the most. It's one of the issues I've evolved on the most. And it's one of these things where, like, I can't win. I kind of piss everybody off with my position because the people who are you know, want way less or no immigration always think I don't go far enough. And I'm not like gung-ho, like build the wall, deport them all. And then the more open borders type feel like I'm compromising my principles or I'm being inconsistent or anti-libertarian or something like that. And truthfully, I don't think any of that is the case. I think that I started from a similar position as John. And in fact, if you listen to this podcast way back in the day, like back in like 2013 or something like that, I think you might have even heard me say, in fact, if you did, you would have heard me say that, you know, I was for open borders. And that was kind of like my starting point. And more or less my justification was, I think, probably pretty similar to what John's would be or what a lot of the open borders libertarian types are. And that would be, what is immigration? It's really just moving. It's just some guy and an imaginary line. And if he wants to cross that imaginary line, why should some government agent come point a gun in his face? Why should violence be initiated on him? He's not doing anything violent. He has the freedom of movement. And that was my starting point. It's only after thinking about the issue more and reading more libertarians who rejected that argument that I started to realize that there's actually a lot more to it. And that, in fact, saying that isn't really necessarily the libertarian answer. It's not exactly consistent with anarcho-capitalism. And let me try to explain why. And then, by the way, there was, even in this last episode, there was a whole bunch of, like is always the case when we talk about immigration, there's a whole bunch of disagreement, and way more so than any other issue, I think. Even like abortion, way more so on immigration, where there are a lot of people who agree or don't think I went far enough, and a lot of people who disagree and are on the open border side. And so part of this is like maybe a little bit of it is on me that I'm not making my position more clear. So let me that's the point of me talking about this. I want to try to do that if I can. I also think there were points in the conversation with John where I kind of held back a little bit from pushing hard because I also like, you know, I kind of, he's a young Rothbardian guy and I didn't want to like, you know, I didn't want to be anything short of kind to him for when he came on our show, you know? So let me try to start from basics and kind of extrapolate where I am on this issue. So more or less, the whole libertarian business, we don't really believe in abstract rights. So sometimes libertarians talk about these things, you know, and they're useful sometimes to paint a picture, like we believe in freedom of speech or freedom of expression or freedom of movement or anything like this. But really, if you get down to it, these abstract rights don't actually exist. All rights are property rights. And this is something important that you have to understand. I remember when I was debating Nick Sarwak at the Soho Forum, at one point he said something along the lines of, like, if you know, there are some type of libertarians who see libertarianism rooted in property rights, and then there's the more, like, Reason Magazine type of libertarians who believe that people should just be free to do whatever they want as long as they're not violent toward other people. And I said at one point, I said that those aren't two different philosophies. One of them is a worked out philosophy, and one of them hasn't thought through the implications of it. It's just kind of a shallow nonsense. And I said, oh, so you can do anything you want to somebody else? And he said, well, don't take me out of context, like, unless you're violent. And it's like, okay, so you can do anything you want as long as you're not violent. Well, how about I just, like, pickpocket you? You know, I'm not violent to you at all. I just take your wallet out of your back pocket or you know, whatever. I hack into your bank account and steal all of your money. I mean, it's not really violent, but don't you see where all of a sudden we're going to need a system of property rights in order to figure out what is really aggression and what isn't? Who does the wallet belong to? Who does that money belong to? If you don't have that, then you have nothing. You just have kind of fluffy, nice talking points. Now, in the same sense, libertarians, we don't just believe in freedom of speech. I mean, somebody can't just, you know, storm into Gas Digital Studios right now and start yelling over me while I'm taping my podcast. We will, you know what I mean? Like, use violence against that guy if he does that. Louis J. Gomez is in the other room. There'll be all sorts of violence used against that guy. Because what we really believe in is property rights. That's what it all comes from. We believe that everybody owns their self, and people have a right to own property and own their possessions, and that really is what everything comes from. So you have the right to say whatever you want to on your property, but you don't have the right, you know, if you have freedom of speech, that doesn't give you the right to a show on Gas Digital to give your speech because you don't own Gas Digital Network. And the owners have the right to put on who they want to. So true liberty, true libertarianism is about believing in property rights. Now, the reason we reject the state on these moral grounds is that the state does things that if anybody else did, we would all consider horrendous and immoral and, you know, a violation of property rights. I mean, it's an institution that is funded off theft. It's funded off taxation, you know, other, but I repeat myself. And of course, the government kills more people, kidnaps more people, enslaves more people, you know, steals from more people and just violates the rights of more people than any other institution or organization or any type of group of people. And so for those reasons, we oppose the state. So the libertarian position, which we all, you know, do agree on in theory, is that the state is illegitimate. The state's illegitimate. It's an organization that is funded by and based off, down to its very core, violating property rights. And so that's illegitimate in the same sense that if any other group did it, it would be illegitimate. This is very basic libertarianism 101 stuff, but I just want to get this out to kind of so you can see where I'm building my principles from. If there are rules of morality, if there are norms that human beings should be subjected to, then that goes for all human beings. There's not different classes of them. And morality, by the very nature of morality, can't be different because we decide some group of people are above the rules of morality. In other words, if it's wrong to murder people, it's wrong for everybody to murder people. And we can't go, well, but we voted and decided there's five people who are allowed to murder. It's still it's the same act. That act has to be either justified or not. And once you come to that conclusion, you realize that the state is illegitimate and every inch of it is illegitimate. So that being said, the anarcho-capitalist answer to immigration is privatize everything. Private property, there you go. if people want to, people don't have a freedom of movement. Property owners have a right to invite people onto their property. And if you're invited, nobody has the right to force you off of that property. And again, unless it's the property owners themselves. So that's the libertarian position on immigration. However, given that the government controls the borders and the government controls immigration, things get a little bit murkier, don't they? The fact that the government has all of this public land, and I'm including in that sidewalks and, you know, everything that is government property, and the government is in control of that. If we're given that, if we're not able to get rid of that, and that's still the reality, well, then it gets a little bit murkier what exactly the libertarian position is. In this case, if you are a libertarian, as the open borders type are telling me, and they're saying, as I've heard from many people, open borders is a libertarian position. Well, no, not really. If you're saying, which pretty much all open borders advocates are in some way saying, if you're saying that the government still owns the borders, the government still controls the borders, but they leave them open, that's no more libertarian than the government controlling the borders and keeping them closed. It's already anti-libertarian if the government is involved at all. If the government exists at all, that's anti-libertarian, okay? Now, one of the examples I brought up had to do with public schools and if people wanted to go do drugs on public schools. Now, I understand. I think maybe I didn't make this clear enough, and that's on me. Because I understand where people start right away, the open borders types, they start seeing everything that's not the same about this example and immigrants. And I get that. I'm not saying they're exactly the same. I'm using this as an example to think about, just as a thought experiment, to think about what libertarians actually believe and to show that it's not as simple as many of the open borders advocates make it out to be. So, if you're saying the libertarian answer is the schools should be private, okay, that's correct. And then whoever owns those schools, of course, has the right to, you know, say, no, you can't enter here. That's trespassing. It's, you know, and you can't do drugs on school. Okay, but look, don't you see? Then this is the point of me using the example. Don't you see how if you're saying the government is still going to run the schools, if we're accepting that as a reality, and then you're only dealing with these two options of either you're going to let people into the school, a school for fourth graders, and they can come in and start doing drugs. And I know I'm using an extreme example to think about the principles here. But if you're not going to let them in, and you're going to say, well, given that the government owns the schools, well, obviously we can't just let someone come in and start fucking shooting up heroin in the middle of, you know, a fourth grade classroom. But don't you see what you're saying? See, the point of this is that it blows all of that freedom of movement crap out of the water. Well, he has freedom of movement, doesn't he? He has freedom of movement, and he owns his own body, so he has the freedom to do, you know, put in his body whatever he wants to. So you're telling me you're okay with a government agent standing on public property and telling someone, no, you're not in the class of people that's allowed in here. We decided the class of people was fourth graders or the parents of those fourth graders, and we're deciding you're not allowed in here. And if you're okay with that, then you already give up what sounds like, which I used to make the same mistake, so I'm not judging anybody, but what sounds like the pure libertarian theory that we just believe in freedom of movement. Well, no, we don't really. We don't. And you can say it's an imaginary line. I mean, it's really the line to the border of that public school is just as imaginary as the border of the country. It's not actually an imaginary line. What it is an illegitimate property claim. And that's true with the public school or with the border. It's not a legitimate property line, okay, which is true. But still, once you're a libertarian, once you accept the anarcho-capitalist position, you can see where, okay, yes, the government is doing something if they tell the heroin addict that he can't come in the public school. But they'd also be doing something if they said anyone can come into the school. Namely, they'd be doing something to those fourth graders in the class. Okay, I'm just using this example to start on the train of understanding that it's not as simple as, hey, this guy has freedom of movement and you're coming in here doing something to him. You're also doing something to open up those borders. And once you do that, things start to get a little bit murkier. Now, of course, there's differences that also jump out at you. If somebody in the border is government land, and you're saying, well, you can't come in here. We're closing the border, let's say. Okay, that's one thing that you might be okay with. But what if but you're not just banning him now from government property. You're also banning him from other private property that exists within the country. And that's an absolutely legitimate libertarian point to make. However, much like with the school, if you have all of this public property within the system and then you open the borders, you're also doing something. So closing the borders is doing something to people who want to come on other private property. Opening the borders and letting everybody in is also doing something because they can move into other public areas, public housing. They can stay on sidewalks or walk around on sidewalks. They can use government roads, all of these other things. And also, on top of that, every method by which a community who didn't want people to come in is basically been made illegal. So they have no recourse. They can't not hire illegals. They can't not accept them into their schools, blah, 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 all of these other things. So either scenario is not pure libertarian. The only thing that's pure libertarian is to say privatize everything, which has always been my position. I'm just saying that as you think these things through, it's not so simple as one is the pure libertarian answer and the other is supporting the state or something like that. Now, the truth is that when you recognize this, you recognize that open borders is not libertarian, and closed borders is not libertarian. Neither of them are libertarian solutions. And then you start to wonder, well, what is, short of privatizing everything, if a government does exist, what should we favor? What is a reasonable compromise within those things? Now, in the example of the public schools, I think it's pretty obvious that the reasonable solution is no. You can't come in here and do drugs in a fourth grade classroom. Sorry, you're not allowed in. And it's not because I care about protecting public property. It's because I care about protecting those fourth graders who are there. But don't you realize, and I think maybe this was lost, and part of it's on me because I didn't want to push it too far, and I didn't want to be unkind to John when he was on the show. But even when he was arguing it with me, what was he left with once I said that? He said, well, I think, you know, the example doesn't hold because that person's being disruptive, whereas the immigrant isn't being disruptive. But you see how all of a sudden we've left libertarian principles behind. You know, disruptive is somewhat subjective. And yes, if you notice that 63 million people voted for Donald Trump, a whole lot of people do think that the flow of immigration is being disruptive. I don't know exactly how you'd prove that or not prove that. But to those people who are like, yeah, I don't really like the idea that, like, now in my children's class, there's, you know, people who've come in from a third world country who look. And by the way, this is the thing that I think what I was arguing about, like, let's be charitable to some of these people. Like, you can just assume if someone goes, you know, by the way, I would say that tweet, someone sent me the tweet that Stefan Molyneux put out about we were never asked, and it did fucking bother me. I thought that was wrong and he shouldn't have tweeted that out. It's just you're tweeting out a picture of children and showing brown children and white children. And there's, you know, it's like he's not exactly saying anything horrible, but the implication is that he kind of is. And I think he shouldn't have done that. I think that was wrong. I wasn't familiar with it at the time when it was brought up, but people have sent it to me since then. But look. Being charitable, if somebody is in a poor neighborhood where a whole bunch of immigrants, illegal, whatever, have come in, and all of a sudden the demographics of the school that they send their kid to have changed drastically, let's not just assume, oh, the reason they're upset about this is because the kids are brown. Like, they just hate brown people, or they just don't want their kids around brown people. The truth is that there's the reason why most of the people flooding over from, like, Honduras and El Salvador and Mexico are coming here is because they were in a desperately bad situation back home. And I certainly have sympathy for them. Have you seen the numbers of, like, what percentage of the girls who come up are sexually abused? It's horrific, okay? Now, I do have a little bit of a different perspective of this as a father now. I'm a father of someone who won't be going to public school, but, you know, not everybody's in that position. It's not just a matter of them being brown, and people may have preferences about that or whatever. But yeah, I'd be pretty upset if my daughter's public school was now all of a sudden 10, 20, 30% people from third world countries, third world cultures who had been through this horrific journey, probably been like abused and traumatized in all types of ways, and are now just going to be in her classroom with her. Yeah, that would be very troubling for me. And those people have zero recourse, or next to zero recourse. That's something too. So it's easy to see the first part, which is like, oh, but what about the people who are coming from this bad situation? But if you're a libertarian, you go, look, any relationship should be voluntary on both sides. That's the essence of the whole libertarian business. All right, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Heshy Socks, my favorite socks. I'm wearing a pair right now. Love them. I told you I went to the opera the other day, wore these real uncomfortable dress shoes, throw on a pair of Heshy socks. Feet are perfectly comfortable at the end of the show. They're the best. And the new collection has been released. They got new styles, new colors, but they still feel great. For those of you who are new to the podcast, as I've told you many times before, Heshy socks are the best socks I've ever owned. I own like 14 pairs of them at this point. If you're tired of your feet hurting and your dress shoes after a long day work, go to HeshySocks.com. They solve this problem. Most fashion socks and dress socks are expensive, they're poorly constructed, and they provide zero protection. Not Heshy socks. Heshy socks are cushioned in the heel, foot, and toe. They have arch support in the center so your feet don't slosh around in your shoes. They're made with high-end, breathable Pima cotton, and they're antimicrobial, so they kill the stink. Your feet are going to smell good. They're going to feel good at the end of a day. And also, they have stay-up technology. They're designed to stay up, so there's no more pulling at your socks all day long. Anyway, go to HeshySocks.com. That's H-E-S-H-I, socks.com. Enter the promo code PROBLEM30, and you're going to get 30% off your entire order. Fashion, basic, ankle socks, they have them all. HeshySocks.com, promo code PROBLEM30 for 30% off. Let's get back into the show. Okay. Now, that all kind of being established, like I said before, you have issues on both sides. So what's the proper solution, short of privatizing everything, which obviously is the ideal solution? Well, I think that actually, if you look at Murray Rothbard and Hans Hermann Hoppe's writing, none of them are advocating for closed borders. Now, there are libertarians on the other side who are advocating for open borders, but that's not really what they're advocating for. If you read Murray Rothbard's Nations by Consent, what he advocated for was that immigration decisions be made at as local a level as possible. So if you can get it down to the states, great. If you can get it down to the cities, great. If you can get it down to the towns, better. If you can get it down to the square block, even better. If you can get it down to the household, that's the absolute best. Okay? So that's more or less his position, which I kind of agree with. Hans Hermann Hoppe proposed a sponsorship idea. So in other words, people can hire illegals or they can bring them onto their property, but they have to sponsor them, meaning more or less that you have to take financial responsibility for them, that you can have a deal worked out with them where they'll work for you or, you know, whatever. But you have to take costs for them and you have to assume the total cost of them, not like the taxpayer picks up 30% of it and you pick up the other 70%. Like, no, it's on you. You can invite people in, but they have to be invited and they have to be sponsored. And this is a reasonable solution to me. It's like the best we can do to kind of simulate what a free market situation, what a libertarian situation would be like, which is like people would have to be invited on and the taxpayer wouldn't be burdened with them. More or less to me seems somewhat reasonable given the situation. The other things that I think are really good solutions that libertarians should embrace is like voter ID laws, any type of, you know, restrictions of welfare, things like that. I think that's fairly common sense, and most libertarians should get on board with that. You know, you don't want people I'm for anything that, you know, discourages anyone from voting. It's not a natural right anyway, and I'm for anything that discourages anyone from getting welfare. So I don't think that's particularly controversial for a libertarian to suggest. And then there's one more issue that I thought was reasonable that maybe should be discussed. And actually, as I was thinking about this, someone in the Tom Woods group, in response to our last podcast, made a video about this. I'm blanking on his name right now. But this is, you know, I want to give him credit, but I fucking forgot his name. But anyway, this guy made a video, and I thought he made some really good points in the video. And one of the things he said was, or one of the questions he pondered was, given you're an anarcho-capitalist, do you think, you know, that we have a right to prioritize what part of the state ought to be abolished before the other ones? And I think that's certainly a fair question to bring up and to think about. You know, libertarians are really, really good at philosophy. Like, we're really, really good at consistent moral philosophy. I think all of the abstract models are very well worked out, and, you know, the, like, kind of a priori logical deductions, great at all that stuff. You know, I think, in fact, we're pretty much the only group of people in the political space who even really care about being morally consistent. And most people who want to be morally consistent end up going in a libertarian direction. What we're not so good at is the strategy department. It's like, okay, we know this much now. How do we get from where we are now to a libertarian society? I don't really have a great answer for that. My feeling, more or less, is you want to convince as many people as you possibly can to be libertarians. That's kind of what I'm in the business of doing. And then when this whole system fucking collapses, which it inevitably will, then hopefully a lot of people believe in liberty, and whatever we rebuild the system with can somewhat be directed in that direction. But I'll be the first to admit that's not exactly like a foolproof plan. Or that's not a strategy that is like guaranteed success. In fact, it's you know, we're up against it. It's kind of unlikely. So anyway, back to this video that this guy made. What he was saying was like, and he used an example that kind of stuck out with me that I thought was a good, a really good example. And he said, do libertarians have a light? If we want to abolish the state, obviously, but can we have priorities about what needs to be abolished in what order? And he used an example like this. Maybe I'll add a little myself to the example, but this is not mine. It was his. And he basically said, let's say like in Britain, they have a complete gun ban. And nobody's allowed to own a gun. So the population is like completely disarmed, or just about completely disarmed. And let's just say, hypothetically, they also put a knife ban and a baseball bat ban. And like, there's no weapons. Nobody's got any weapons whatsoever. You know, you can't have a blade longer than 2 inches or something like that. And let's say right next door, you know, there are all of these militias that really, really hate the Brits. Maybe it's some beef from 50 years ago, or maybe it's just the way they're indoctrinated, or maybe it's for good reason. The Brits are just really pissing them off. So there's all these militias. And then the government says there's a move to abolish the military. Okay? Now, would it be reasonable for a libertarian to say, yes, I do want to abolish the military, but first we have to abolish the gun ban so that people can have guns, so that they can defend themselves? Because abolishing the military without lifting the gun ban is a sure recipe for people to get slaughtered. So we're against the state, but we're also against violence in general. And if you abolish this before that, it's guaranteed that these people are going to come in and just start slaughtering people. Like, we know they'll do it. Just to make the example even, you know, more compelling, they just did this to someone else who abolished the military without abolishing the gun ban first next door. They're going to come do this to us. Is it okay for a libertarian to say, no, this has to be abolished first? I think it absolutely is. Now, again, I'm not saying that's the exact same situation as immigration. I'm just trying to get people to think through the principles and realize that once you concede the principle, we're now into arguing the details. We're not into arguing, you know, and yes, I do think that if everything else continues the same and we just continue to let a flood of people in who vote about 70 to 80% for Democrats, I think Texas is flipping blue. California is already blue forever. Couple more states flip blue, and that's it. And I'm not saying the Republicans aren't statists, but it's not a coincidence that like the 5 good congressmen are in the Republican side. It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence that all the socialists, the ones who at least proclaim to be socialists, are all on the Democratic side. So I just see a lot of danger there. Not as dire as the militia unarmed Brits example. I'm just saying, think through the principle of these things. So, in conclusion with all of this, what should the libertarians take on immigration be? This is what I'll say, okay? This is what I think it should be. Number one, I think we should never stop making it clear what our ultimate goal is and what we really want. This is why I try my best when people say, what do you want to do about immigration? And I'm like, end the war on drugs, end the welfare state, abolish the DEA, which I guess is involved in ending the war on drugs, legalize discrimination, privatize everything. Like, get right down to it. I saw someone tweeted at me the other day that they were like, you know, ending the welfare state and ending the war on drugs isn't an immigration policy. And it's like, oh, how wrong you are. It absolutely is an immigration policy. And you have a big problem with gangs shipping drugs up through the southern border. Yep, the war on drugs absolutely is an immigration policy. You'd put them all out of business immediately. So of course, you know, all of these policies. So never stop, like, libertarians should never stop pointing at the North Star and being like, this is where we're trying to go. Anything incremental to that, you know, support it. Support voter ID laws, support, you know, anything that can restrict welfare or voting or any of that stuff. But it's certainly not as simple as saying I'm for open borders. That's more or less my take on it. Now, again, I understand that it's a little bit like it's not as easy to just describe the libertarian take on immigration as it is with so many other issues. But I think my reasoning is sound on this. And if you don't agree with me, I'm sure you won't hesitate to let me know, as you guys already have. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is UBDI. I love these guys. So thrilled to have them on board. This is a company built on libertarian principles from a fan of the show. So with UBDI, you can compete with large-scale companies like Google, Facebook, and Twitter in the marketplace for your data. Such a cool idea. UBDI removes the incentives for brands to track you online by creating a platform where consumers can group together, sell their data directly to companies, all while remaining completely anonymous. Here's how it works. Companies are already tracking you online and grouping you with other people to sell your data. UBDI allows you to reclaim millions of data points and securely store them in an encrypted data vault only you can access. By answering targeted survey questions like why you switched from Uber to Lyft and grouping these with other members, your data becomes much more valuable than what the tech companies can offer. With UBDI, the data also verifies you're a real person, not a bot, which is why brands and even pollsters would rather buy it from you. As more users join UBDI platform, the incentives for companies to track us online will be removed from the marketplace. The best part is that with UBDI, you'll make 80% of the profit when you consent to share data with companies. This means as much as $1,000 a year of passive income in your pocket, and considering it's your data, you might as well profit from it. So right now, click the link in the episode description to download the UBDI app. Make sure you go click that link, start making some money, start reclaiming your data, support a libertarian company. And as a special offer, they have a survey for fans of this show where you'll get paid $5 to participate if you enter the custom tag POTP during sign up. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, moving on. There was a debate last night. There was a... There was some interesting stuff that happened in the debate. Maybe I'll do what I normally do, just kind of go through how I think people did. So one of the things that's interesting about this debate is that it's, you know, it's like 3 weeks out from Iowa. And the debate was in Iowa, and, you know, it's like now things are kind of getting serious. So, you know, hold on 1 second. I gotta just confirm that I got the email from Kennedy, because I'm going on Kennedy tonight, which is why I'm wearing a shirt and tie, by the way, in case you thought I was just dressing up for you bastards. So the Iowa primaries are coming up very soon, and this is the last debate before the Iowa primaries, so that added a little bit of, you know, importance to the debate. Although I didn't think too many of them really acted like it, which is always, you know, kind of surprising to me, that it's like, it just seems like, You would treat this like, well, I'm going to go for it right now. And I didn't really get that vibe out of anyone. Anyway, going through the list, so there were 6 people on the debate stage. To me, Bernie Sanders was the winner of the night. I thought he was just by far, he's by far the best at the debates. He is the only one who really separates himself from the pack. He's got a good energy. He believes what he believes. He repeats the same things over and over again, but hey, that's politics, I guess. I thought the night belonged to Bernie Sanders. I thought Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren both had very bad nights. Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren, they're just not good at this. I don't know. We've seen enough of these debates now. They're not good at these debates. And, it's surprising to me that their poll numbers are still where they are. Joe Biden was horrible. I mean, not his worst debate performance so far, but still really bad. He does what nobody else at any of these debates ever does. And he did it several times again last night where he just wrapped up before his time was over. At one point, he even said, he goes, I'm not going to go over like everybody else does. So that's all for me. And it's like, dude, they're giving you like 45 seconds. You don't have 45 seconds worth of shit to tell me? You want to be the commander in chief and you don't have 45 seconds of an answer to this question? It's pathetic. He stumbles all over himself, just very bad. And he doesn't look good. Look, Joe Biden, I mean, Bernie Sanders, I think, is a couple years older than Joe Biden. But you know how, like, when you're 80, like, you know, 80-year-olds. I don't mean when you're 80, but you know, when you deal with, or you talk to an 80-year-old, there's almost like, you know, it can go one of two ways. There's 80-year-olds who you're like, hey, you know, they're older and they're having knee problems and hip problems, but they're still there and they're still as sharp as ever. And then you talk to some 80-year-olds who are like, yeah, he's not as sharp as he used to be. Well, Bernie Sanders is the prior and Joe Biden is the latter. You know, that's just the case. And the truth is that once that starts, it doesn't go in the opposite direction. It just gets worse and worse. This is Joe Biden trying to be president before he's even been sworn in. Can you imagine if Joe Biden actually becomes president, what it's going to be like in 2 years and 3 years? Oh, it's going to be hilarious. Almost enough to make you root for Joe Biden. That's how funny it's going to be. Anyway, I thought they all had very bad nights. Amy Klobuchar is just terrible. I don't know what the hell that woman's doing on stage. She's doing the whole thing. She's shaky. Like, her hair is shaking again. They kind of figured that out in the last debate. And then this one, it was just terrible again. And like, she sounds like she's about to cry. She's shaking. I don't know what it is. I don't know if she's having, like, anxiety issues with these debates or it's just something about her. But anyway, it doesn't come off good. I thought that Tom Snyder, whatever his name is, that the billionaire guy, I thought he had a pretty bad night too. Nothing memorable. The one thing that bothered me so much about him, which I just can't stand, you know, but it's actually, he actually has the balls to say income inequality is a moral travesty or something along those lines. Can you imagine? Just like, that's what it is to be like a fucking liberal in today's day and age. You can be a billionaire and then say income inequality is horrible. And what, now you get to be a billionaire and virtuous because you fucking say it. So you get both. What the fuck are you doing? So give your money away, bro. So give your fucking money away. And there, you just fucking close the income inequality gap a little bit. I'm sorry, you can't be in the 0.00001% and say, isn't it terrible that some people are in the 0.0001%? Sorry, you give away 99% of your money and still have more than 99% of people who have ever lived. That's, you know, so no, I'm sorry. You don't get to bitch about it. Anyway, there's, and who am I leaving out? Fuck, I'm forgetting someone. Yeah, all right, maybe it'll come back to me at some point. All right, so the debate opened up, which was interesting to me, and, you know, I was happy to see that the debate opened up with about a half hour on foreign policy, which is the first time in any of these Democratic debates that that's happened. And of course, it was because there was this this dust up in Iran, and so they were kind of forced to talk about it because it's the only like thing that's really been dominating the news lately. And anyway, it was nice that they were at least forced to do it. Oh, Mayor Pete is the other guy. Sorry. Sorry for forgetting Mayor Pete Buttstuff. He did what he always does, was fine, but just not good enough. You know, the same thing as usual. So they opened up on foreign policy, and I thought Bernie Sanders really dominated this performance. I mean, he was just so clearly, he was by far the best. He was the only one who actually said anything of substance. You know, again, just like Bernie typically, didn't quite have the killer, wasn't quite willing to go for the jugular, but was way better than the rest. Way better. And, you know, maybe we'll get into more of this a little bit later, how Bernie, what Bernie's real advantage in all of this is. But Bernie won the first 30 minutes, hands down. I don't even understand how you could make an argument anybody else won the first 30 minutes. None of them had anything even remotely, nothing you could even understand. I mean, they don't, none of them even know what they're saying, except Bernie, who came out very clearly and was like, look, you know, he said, I got to say, he didn't go as far as I would like him to, particularly at one point he was asked about the rise of ISIS. And I know Bernie knows this. So it's like, why can't you just, why are you just not allowed to point out that ISIS was funded and armed by the West, by the CIA, the Saudis, Israel, Turkey, and Obama's administration? You know, like, why aren't you allowed to say that? And then how do you have a conversation about this otherwise? You know. Like Joe Biden's there taking credit for the Obama administration ending the war in Iraq. And it's like, isn't the counterpunch so obviously right there? It's like, yeah, you did end the war in Iraq, but then you fucking armed ISIS and you had to go back into Iraq to deal with the problem that you caused. So sorry, you don't get the credit for ending the war in Iraq. Anyway, Bernie did say some really great things. He was like, look, I was against this war in Iraq from the very beginning. It was a disaster. Said Joe Biden voted for it. I did not. I knew they were lying at the time. At one point, he brought up the war in Yemen, which I really appreciated. And he has been really good in the Senate on the war in Yemen. And he talks about how he was leading the fight to end that, you know, terrible, terrible war over there. And then he had one line that he said that I really loved. Where he said, you know, the two, you know, worst decisions, or the two worst policies, or however he put it, in our lifetime, and of course he's talking, you know, Biden, Warren, Bernie Sanders' lifetime, not me and your lifetime, but he said the worst decisions in our lifetime were the war in Vietnam and the war in Iraq, and they were both sold off lies. You know, again, he could have gone a little bit further, and pointed out, you know, like Libya and Syria and, you know, pretty much all of the wars, the war in the Balkans, for God's sakes, like all of these wars were sold off lies, although I think he supported that last one. But still pretty damn good. Still pretty damn good. Anyone who's willing to point out that your government will lie you into war, I think there's some benefit there. And he just dominated the night. Elizabeth Warren had nothing to offer. You know, Mayor Pete had nothing. Joe Biden had nothing. You know, he's like, yes, I did vote for the war, but I was wrong for that. And then I did good stuff afterward. It's like, just such a weak argument. I mean, how can you actually stand up there with any degree of seriousness and say, yes, I did vote for this war in Iraq. And you know, yes, Bernie Sanders does make a pretty good point that, you know, we killed hundreds of thousands of people and wasted trillions of dollars, and not to mention 4,000 or 5,000 of our own people dying. But, you know, oops. Got it wrong. Let me be commander in chief. It's like, all right. Even if we accept your oops apology, no, you don't get to make this call again. Elizabeth Warren didn't know what to do. She just has nothing to add. It's just kind of like insults to Donald Trump. And then basically they go down the list, and Bernie Sanders, you know, he didn't quite have the balls to just go Ron Paul, you know, which is the great line that Ron Paul used, which nobody else really has ever had the courage to say, which is just as simple as, we just marched in, we can just march out. What do we need to do with these wars in the Middle East? Leave. That's what we need to do. Leave. Now, the rest of them all said they would leave troops behind. You know, some of them said, well, not combat troops. I always love when they say this. Well, we don't want to leave any combat troops behind, but we will leave, you know, special forces, I think, is what Biden said. You know, We'll leave some special forces or special ops. I don't remember what he said, but we'll leave some of them, but no combat forces. Like, what is that? Our fucking special ops aren't combat forces now? I mean, they seem to do a lot of combat. Are they going over with guns? Okay, then I think I consider them combat forces. But, of course, none of the reporters, this is a CNN debate, so of course they don't, but none of the reporters really push them on this. But it's like, you know, if you can't say you would leave Iraq now, I mean, there's just an obvious problem with this, okay? We went in to fight the war in Iraq, you know, after all the other bullshit reasons fell apart, if you recall, right? So it started with, like, weapons of mass destruction and all this other bullshit, but the final justification for us being there was to bring democracy to the region. And all these Democrats, right, they claim to love democracy. They are members of the Democratic Party. It's where the word comes from. They all claim to love democracy. Well, the fucking Iraqi parliament, the democratically elected Iraqi parliament, just voted for us to leave. How do we have a right to stay there? And then, of course, they all of a sudden, they've, you know, decided that Congress needs to be involved. But, you know, it's hard to take it too seriously when they only feel that way when a Republican's in the presidency. But anyway, I thought it was, like, very confused responses from just about all of them. Bernie Sanders just dominated, won the night. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is BetDSI.com. They've been around for over 20 years in the business, top rated on review sites, super easy to use. You can gamble on games as they go. Great customer service available 24/7, 365. And most importantly, they've built a great reputation on fast payments of winnings. BetDSI is the place for online gambling. Big, big, big UFC card coming up on Saturday. Conor McGregor coming back to the octagon to fight Donald Cerrone. I'm picking Conor. I'm going heavy in this. This fight was tailor-made for him. I think he's coming back hungry with something to prove, and he's going to knock out Donald Cerrone. My guess is the second round, perhaps the third, but I don't see it getting much further than that. I'd go second round knockout, Conor McGregor. But as you guys know, I'm never wrong about these things. So you want to make some money, all you got to do is listen to me. Go over to BetDSI.com, and when you go there, make sure you use promo code POTP120. That way they know we sent you. It's a nice way to help out the show. And also, if you want, you can get some bonus cash. Now, if you take the bonus cash, you have to gamble a certain amount before you can pull the money out. So there are rollover requirements. If you just want to gamble and cash out, don't take the bonus money. But if you do, they give you 60% bonus cash. So if you put $1,000 in, you're playing with $1,600. So it's a pretty awesome deal. If you want to gamble a lot, definitely take that. Either way, go to BetDSI.com, use promo code POTP120, and yeah. Start having some fun. Start making some money. All right, let's get back into the show. After the foreign policy talk, the question that's gotten the most traction out of anyone was the thing about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. So more or less, if you haven't been following this, Elizabeth Warren said somewhere in the last week, she said that in 2018, Bernie Sanders told Elizabeth Warren that a woman could never be president. And Elizabeth Warren has decided to tell you about this now. Now, Bernie Sanders denies doing this, denies saying this. I'll tell you, look, there's no way to know what was said in a private conversation. However, I believe Bernie on this one. And the reason why I would err on the side of believing Bernie Sanders is for a few reasons. Number one, Elizabeth Warren is a known liar. She is a known liar. And as I've said before, you know, the whole thing about her pretending to be a fucking Native American, and it's not as if she just, like, said this once. She put it on her fucking bar exam. She was listed as a female professor of color at Harvard. She put out a recipe in a Native American cookbook. Like, she was straight up living a lie, pretending to be a Native American when she wasn't. And the reason why that's more substantial than just the fact that you're, like, you know, defrauding affirmative action programs, the reason why that's, you know, a big deal is because somebody who's willing to lie about something like that, that won't be the only thing they lie about. If you're willing to live a lie like that, you're a liar. And people like that don't lie just about one thing. They lie about a lot of things. And then, of course, it's come out that there's several other things that she lied about that are pretty big, like her story, her father's occupation, being pregnant, being fired because she was pregnant. You know, she was telling this was part of her stump speech that she was going around saying everywhere, I was fired because I was pregnant. Then they found an interview with her from like 5 years ago where she was talking about being fired for a completely different reason and that they were actually supportive of her when she was pregnant. So she's a liar. So we know she's a liar. And now she's claiming that Bernie Sanders said this thing to her in 2018. But she's decided to tell everybody 3 weeks before the Iowa primary when he's out polling her. That's when she's decided to go after this. And it gets to something else that's really and I've said this before, but it's still the same situation. Here's the advantage that Bernie Sanders has. This is why this whole thing is his if he just wants to take it. All right? Bernie Sanders is the only one up there who can actually differentiate himself from other candidates on things that matter. Remember I was saying last week, like Cory Booker dropped out and they're like, oh, the race just got less diverse. Now it's just, you know, white people. Oh, this is a real problem because we don't have a black guy there. And it's kind of revealing where you're like, yeah, so that's all Cory Booker was. It was the black guy. Oh, he tried to have all these woke progressive policies. Yeah, so does everybody else. So what? You know? What issue was he championing that won't be championed now? Nothing. So that's all they got. Bernie Sanders is not in that situation. Now, some of the other ones can try to differentiate themselves on being slightly more moderate, but it doesn't really work. You know, like Mayor Pete can say, hey, these guys want to spend like, you know, $30 trillion on healthcare. I only want to spend like $3 trillion on healthcare. But once you're acknowledging that we should spend another $3 trillion on healthcare, it's like, well, why not $30 trillion? I mean, why not add a zero? You know, all these numbers sound goofy and made up anyway. Now, if you're saying there's a problem with just spending all of this money, then you can actually differentiate yourself. But they're not doing that. So you're just kind of coming off as not willing to go far enough. Well, we have to spend another $3 trillion because there's people without health care. We have to get them covered. It's like, all right, well, we have to spend $30 trillion because there's people with health care who need free insulin. You know, like there's once you go down that road, it's a very tough way to differentiate yourself. Bernie Sanders is looking at Joe Biden. And he's going, Joe Biden supported the war in Iraq. Joe Biden supported NAFTA. Joe Biden supports the war on drugs. Joe Biden supports that, like, feel however you feel about the issues. He's talking about real issues that really matter, that really affect real people. That's what he's bringing up. Now, Elizabeth Warren, what does she have for Bernie Sanders? Basically, you're sexist. That's what she's got. You know? Like, basically a fucking veiled, you know, critique of being sexist. And it's just so, you know, for her to bring this up now, it just comes off as so petty and kind of shitty. Like, even if Bernie Sanders did say this, so you're saying he said something kind of offensive to you in a private conversation 2 years ago, and you're deciding to bring it up for political purposes now? Even if it was true, which I don't buy, but even if it was true, you still come off like a shitty person. Anyway, here's the moment. Let's play the clip. Here's the moment that everyone was talking about.
Let's not turn to an issue that's come up in the last 48 hours. Senator Sanders, CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement, that in 2018, you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me, knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did run afterwards. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States?
So here's the thing, right? And this is the, so that I told you that's the benefit that, that Bernie Sanders has, right? That he can separate himself from other people. The problem Bernie Sanders has, which I've been saying through this whole campaign, is for whatever reason, he does not have the killer in him. Now, that was, by the way, that answer was pretty good. It was pretty good, pretty forceful, pretty, it's incomprehensible that I would say this. I wanted Elizabeth Warren to run for president before I was even running. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. It's ridiculous to say a woman can't be president. Oh, okay. You know, again, in the world of Democratic, you know, primary politics, pretty good answer. But don't you see where it's missing a little something? This is the kind of like autistic Bernie Sanders problem that he has where he's not able to actually take on other people. Look, Bernie, here's the reality. If what you're saying is true, right, that you didn't say this and it's incomprehensible that you would say anything like this, well, then somebody, okay, another human being, let's pretend for a second you're a human being, another human being who you encouraged to run for president, who's saying that they're your friend, is lying about you, smearing you, fucking calling you a sexist by implication, 3 weeks before the first primary, just for political purposes. So someone who's a friend of yours, who you've been there for, you've done good things for, is fucking trying to ruin you for strictly political purposes. So the response there isn't, can't just be this, like, this is the autistic part where it's like, no, I wouldn't say that. I could never say that. What are you talking about? It's like, shouldn't the response be, of course I didn't say that, and I can't believe Elizabeth Warren would lie about me for political purposes. If this is true, why didn't you say this about me 3 years ago when you're saying I said it? No, this is, you know what I mean? Like, there isn't, because it was an opportunity for him to flip it around from being a challenge on his integrity to be like, no, this is about your integrity. I didn't say that, and you're lying about me. Is the implication that I'm a sexist? Because of this, of course I didn't say this. If that's true, then why was I supporting you for running for president in 2015? Why'd I endorse Hillary Clinton or whatever? You know, he could go in different ways. Maybe he doesn't want to remind people that he endorsed that nightmare, murderous, blood-soaked lizard person. But whatever. Anyway, then the other thing you realize is that Bernie Sanders, you know, which has come up a lot, is how much against Bernie Sanders the media is. And watch this next exchange. CNN's gotten a lot of heat for this. It's pretty remarkable.
And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
All right, let's pause it right there.
I disagreed.
Isn't that fucking incredible? That they would literally just go, so you're saying you never said this. That's right, I never said it. Elizabeth Warren, when he said that, how'd you feel? That's their next question. It's not as if this was three questions later and that happened to come up. It's the next second after Bernie Sanders says that. They just basically jump in and start arguing, well, we have to take Elizabeth Warren's word for this. And Bernie Sanders laughs and the whole crowd laughs. And this is when the media overplays their hand with their obvious, like, you have a dog in this fight strategy. This was not a mistake. This was very clearly intentional. And when everyone's laughing, that's a kind of a bad sign. And they go, oh, yeah, we see how you just set that up. And then, of course, Elizabeth Warren also just plays into it and just takes it as a given. Well, I disagreed. So no one's even going to acknowledge that the guy is saying, I didn't say this. And even then, Elizabeth Warren, if he did say this and he's saying he didn't, you should be like, Bernie, you're not telling the truth. You absolutely said this to me. None of that. But then Elizabeth Warren goes into this moment, and we'll see why Elizabeth Warren is so terrible.
Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy
so
and
true.
Me.
So true.
So person on this stage who has beaten an incumbent Republican any time in the past 30 years is me. And here's what I know. The real danger that we face as Democrats is picking a candidate who can't pull our party together or someone who takes for granted big parts of the Democratic constituency. We need a candidate who will excite all parts of the Democratic Party, bring everyone in, and give everyone a Democrat to believe in. That's my plan, and that is why I'm going to win.
Senator Klobuchar.
Thank you.
All right. So there's Elizabeth Warren's response. Now, of course, this gets a big pop from the crowd because anytime you do this kind of girl power, we've won elections, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, Elizabeth Warren, you winning elections in a liberal district doesn't really prove anything about what you can do to Donald Trump in a national election. But again, just realize that this is what she's got. There are a lot of these things that get big applause from the people who go to a Democratic debate. But is that really going to sway voters who care about meat and potatoes issues? You know, this is the fucking, first off, it's just so slimy for her to say, Bernie's my friend, I'm not trying to pick a fight with Bernie, but it's time we addressed this question. Who's asking this question? You inserted this question into the record just so you could give this canned bullshit response to it. Now, Bernie Sanders is differentiating himself on some issues of actual substance. This is just fucking nonsense, and I don't think it's a winning hand for Elizabeth Warren to be playing. But we'll see what happens, because the media is clearly against Bernie Sanders. The DNC was against him last time. He doesn't really seem to be trying to win, or if he is, he doesn't have that killer to really go for it. Look, Bernie Sanders has gone this whole campaign without pointing out the obvious. Like, if you were Bernie Sanders' campaign manager and you were like, okay, we're thinking about what speeches we're going to give or what talking points we're going to deliver, the first one you'd think he still hasn't mentioned this whole time, which is obvious. You guys cheated me last time. You guys cheated me last time and decided Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee, and look what you did. You gave the White House to Donald Trump. I would have beaten him. It's my time now. The whole party's moved to me. We're going to beat him. All these people are saying they want to, you know, these like democratic socialist policies. Who really has the credibility to say they're actually, you know, the real democratic socialists? It's me. Like, that's obviously his selling point. And he just refuses to make it. And he's left it very close. He's still leading in the Iowa polls, but it's very, very close. And as you know, I've learned in the Ron Paul days, if you leave it close, they can cheat you out of that shit. So I'd say be careful. That would be my message to Bernie Sanders. Now, the other thing that I just want to mention before we wrap up, there was this other thing that I think might be really damaging for Bernie Sanders if he were to win in a general election, and that was this Project Veritas video that came out recently. I was going to play the video on the show. Oh, you know what? Even before I get into that, let me say, the other thing that was really weird is that that a lot of people are watching is that Elizabeth Warren refused to shake Bernie Sanders' hand after the debate, and they seem to have a pretty awkward, tense little interaction there. So, you know, it doesn't make sense to play the video on the show because, you know, like 90-something percent of our audience listens audio, and there's no audio in it, but you know, you can go watch it on YouTube, and she very clearly refuses to shake his hand, and they have like a weird confrontation afterward. So anyway, maybe there's some beef there. But the other thing I was going to say is this Project Veritas video that came out, which I'm also not going to play on the show just because the audio quality is so bad. It doesn't make sense. But Project Veritas, you know, they do all this like guerrilla undercover journalism where they secretly record people. So they got a couple members, high-up members of Bernie Sanders' campaign, and was it creepy what one of the guys was talking about. And he was basically saying that we need re-education camps in America to train the, quote, Nazis to not be Nazis anymore. And, of course, Nazi is defined by anyone you don't like, according to these people. So he's like, basically, that's why we have Donald Trump, because of the Nazis. And then he actually starts talking about the Soviet gulags and how they really weren't so bad. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, people give the Soviet gulags bad names because of what he said, CIA propaganda. But really, you know, the Soviet gulags were just for re-education. As he said, you know, you take some rich guy and you make him work every day in the gulags, and then he understands what it's like to be the working class. It's about the creepiest thing you'll ever fucking hear. And this guy is saying this with all sincerity. Now, normally, in normal politics, this would be the type of thing that's like, everyone agrees we won't bring this up. However, Donald Trump doesn't play by those rules, and I think this could really hurt Bernie Sanders. I think there's going to be a lot of, especially in the internet age with Donald Trump running, there's going to be a lot of these videos where this is played with montages of Bernie Sanders praising every authoritarian socialist regime in the last, you know, whatever, 300 years, however long he's been alive. I just think it's, first off, it's terrifying. And it also, it gets to the point of what I was trying back when I was arguing with Sarwak and when I've argued with a lot of these other left libertarians. It's like people have, and even just to the last episode, right? When I was saying the point that I was making where I said, well, why is it, which our guest John agreed with me on, why is it if I were to have Pat Buchanan on and say, I have the great Pat Buchanan coming in studio today, or I were to have, you know, I were to have Noam Chomsky on or someone like that and say, the great Noam Chomsky's coming in today. Or I would say, you know, whatever, the, you know, whoever, leftist, insert them there. Why is it that I would get way more shit for saying that about Pat Buchanan, even though he clearly is way closer to the libertarian position than Noam Chomsky or than Jimmy Dore or than, you know, Tulsi Gabbard or someone like that? Well, why would I get more shit for saying that about Pat Buchanan? And he agreed that I would, and no one really has an answer for that. Why is that? And here's the answer, okay? This is it, because the propaganda, which we've all been propagandized into to some degree, and which Nick Sarwak openly said when he was on my show, is he said, racists are bad people, but communists are misguided. See, this is the structure that you have to exist in, and a lot of people just implicitly or without really thinking it through, just agree with this. They go, yeah, yeah, yeah. See, the thing is that Pat Buchanan's a bad person, whereas Noam Chomsky or, you know, whoever, Tulsi Gabbard, might just be misguided on economics. Now, I'm not saying Noam Chomsky or Tulsi Gabbard are a bad person, but I don't think Pat Buchanan is either. You know? Like, I think they're all misguided on a few issues, and Pat Buchanan is way better on more issues than they are. But if you're going to buy into this logic, first off, the left is always going to win because obviously you'll always prefer someone who's a little misguided to someone who's evil. And also, it's ignoring a lot of leftist history. Like, how much history of leftists do you need before you stop giving them this pass? Is the 20th century not enough to say, I don't know if all these leftists are just misguided? I think some of them might be downright evil. And that's where you see this shit. And that's why I really thought Project Veritas did such a great service by exposing this. It's like, oh yeah, look at that. That's not misguided, man. If you're saying the gulags aren't so bad and we need to throw every Trump supporter into a re-education camp, that is fucking evil, terrifying, authoritarian communism. That's what that shit is. It's not misguided. It's fucking evil. Communism is a lot more than misguided. It's the most evil ideology ever. And I submit the 20th century as a exhibit A. And I think I could come back with a guilty verdict just from that. All right, I got to wrap up there. I'm running over to Fox News to go do Kennedy tonight. So you, if you're listening to this live, you can catch me on there at 9 p.m. And if not, you missed it. I was on Kennedy last night, and I did a great job. So thanks a lot. Thanks for watching. Do not forget that me and Rob Bernstein will be at the Comedy Hideout in Boston. We're going to be there on February 7th, one night only. The tickets are selling fast to this, man. This thing's going to sell out, so I really want you guys to come out for it. Please go grab tickets now if you're in the Boston area at the Comedy Hideout, February 7th. I tweeted out the link to it, but I'll go ahead and do that again after the show today so you guys can go grab tickets. All right. Thanks for watching, listening, tuning in. I appreciate it. Be back on Friday with a brand new episode. Peace.